The South by Southwest Interactive Conference is going on this week in Austin, Texas. It is a magnet for techies. In fact, the summit has been credited with launching Twitter. One of the sessions this year centers on the positives and negatives of the digital revolution. And one of the featured speakers was internet entrepreneur Andrew Keen, now an internet skeptic. His new book is called The Internet Is Not the Answer. He joins us to talk about it. Andrew Keen, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So what's wrong with the internet? Why is it not the answer?
The internet isn't the answer because it's compounding three of the fundamental problems of early 21st century life: inequality, unemployment, and the emergence of a surveillance culture, a surveillance economy.
Meaning what? How is it compounding those things?
Well, the economics of the internet lend themselves to a winner-take-all economy, the hollowing out of the middle class, the emergence of a tiny plutocratic elite of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and technologists. Technology, particularly artificial intelligence, is resulting in a terrible crisis of employment for the old middle class, for the skilled middle class, and for the unskilled, the drivers, the other factory workers who are being undermined by digital technology. And thirdly, the dominant business model of the internet, the free model, pioneered by companies like Google and Facebook, are predicated on them packaging us up as the product and selling our data to advertisers. So what is free is actually turning out, for us at least, for internet users, to be extremely expensive.
Well, in fact, the saying goes, if you're getting something for free on the internet, you're not the customer, you're the product, which I think there's some truth to that. But let me go back to what you said a moment ago, though. Could we possibly have avoided this? It has made us, you could say, much more efficient. If I'm a business owner, I can Google widget makers in Indianapolis, and I can immediately find a number of them instead of taking much longer to do the same thing, which we would have had to do before. There are certain aspects of manufacturing that, yes, have been replaced by machines, but could we have really avoided that happening as we get smarter and as we develop these kinds of things?
One thing we could certainly have avoided is the free business model. I think when we buy our tea in the morning, when we buy our clothing, when we buy our gas for our cars, we exchange cash. And I think that's one of the fundamental problems with the contemporary internet, is that the business model doesn't work. It doesn't really work ultimately for us. And that needs to be rethought. We're in control there. We can't simply sit back and imagine ourselves to be powerless, because that's the problem with much of this technology. And then we really will reach what some people call the singularity, where computers or intelligent machines essentially replace us.
Well, what do you mean that we are not in control now?
What I mean is that this technology is doing stuff that isn't making us happy. For example, the emergence of artificial intelligence is lending itself to an employment crisis where, in the long term, it's not clear where the vast majority of us are going to do. And I think most people, when they think about that, aren't happy with that scenario. Many economists are deeply worried that in the past, of course, new technologies have destroyed old jobs and created new ones. But it's not clear what people are going to do in an age of intelligent machines, where machines are going to be replicating the work of doctors and teachers and accountants, politicians, and even, dare I say it, radio broadcasters.
Uh-oh. I think that's already
happened.
In some places. Yes, well, that's not a tough one. You know, they've got DJs out there that are really just computers that are talking.
So what are you going to do in the future?
I don't know. I've got to figure it out. But you could also say that it's leveling the playing field. The internet is offering everybody an equal opportunity to compete in a way that people, especially in rural areas who were not in the middle of big urban cities that had a lot of opportunity, that they can now compete in a way that they couldn't before.
I don't buy this leveling of the playing field argument. You could go out and buy a lottery ticket, and everyone has that opportunity. In that sense, there's a level playing field. But the reality, out of every million people who buy a lottery ticket, only one will be the winner. And that's the same with the digital economy. It's a winner-take-all economy in which a tiny group of companies are dominant. It's doing away with much of the competition of the industrial age, hollowing out the middle. So I don't buy this idea that it's flattening things out. If anything, this world is much rockier, much more mountainous than the old 20th century industrial world.
Andrew Keen, you worked in Silicon Valley for many years. You even created a startup called AudioCafe.com. You got funding. What happened that made you sour on the internet like this?
I haven't soured on the internet. I still live in Silicon Valley. I'm still very close to a lot of technology companies. I even have my own startup in the Valley called Futurecast. I'm simply skeptical about some of the more idealistic claims of the original internet evangelists who claimed democratization, egalitarianism, and all the rest of the things which haven't happened. And actually, in my book, I quote a lot of people who have been very involved in the internet revolution, guys like Mike Moritz and Fred Wilson, investors, winners in this economy, who are as worried as I am about monopoly, about surveillance, about bullying. Even Marc Andreessen, the original pinup boy of the internet, the guy who founded Netscape and is now probably the most illustrious venture capitalist in the Valley, is deeply worried about the impact of bullying and is refusing to invest in companies like Secret. So I think there is a feeling generally in Silicon Valley that this revolution has gone wrong. It doesn't mean that we go back to the certainties of the analog age. We can't turn time backwards, but we have to acknowledge that there are severe structural problems with the revolution.
You talk about monopoly, and I guess you could make that case for these big companies like Apple and Facebook and Google. But then I think about the old time monopolies, and you could say that the taxi industries in each city were monopolies. And now the internet has provided Uber, which competes with that and has disrupted in a big way.
There's a big difference, though. I accept the fact that there was a kind of oligarchy, an old bureaucratic oligarchy in the traditional cab business. But think of the tens of thousands of small cab companies that emerged in that ecosystem. Today, Uber threatens to sweep that entire ecosystem away. So in place of all those tens, hundreds of thousands of small companies, small cab entrepreneurial organizations, which ran 5 or 10 cabs, we have a single dominant platform, which is making billionaires of a tiny group of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and forcing everyone else to work on their platform without the traditional security of jobs. These aren't real jobs. This is the gig economy, which is also contributing to the hollowing out of the middle class.
So why do people think that they have such choice if, as you say, this has become such a choiceless economy?
I think they need to read my book and they need to read other books like mine. We have been sold a bill of goods. It's very seductive. It sounds great. Everything's for free. Everyone benefits. But the reality is that we need to wake up. We need to be more critical. We need to understand that even the cult of the consumer, which is being peddled by guys like Amazon's Jeff Bezos, is impoverishing us as citizens. The internet is great in many ways. And as I acknowledge in the book, I couldn't have written my book. I couldn't earn my living without the internet. But much of the promise has actually been deeply disappointing.
You, in your book, call the internet not the great disruptor, but the great destructor. And I want you to read a little bit so people can get a sense of what you are saying about the internet. If you could read from page 142.
I have to put my glasses on here.
Sure.
Web 2.0 was supposed to democratize media and empower those historically without a voice. So yes, anyone can now post on Twitter, Tumblr, and Pinterest. Some of us may even win the lottery and get retweeted or friended by what George Packer memorably be described as one of the celebrity monuments of our age. And yes, we can post our ideas on the Huffington Post, our videos on YouTube, our photos on Instagram, and our music on Facebook. But there's no money in any of this for the vast majority of young writers, musicians, photographers, journalists, or filmmakers. It's mostly a gift economy where the only profits are being made by a tiny group of increasingly monopolistic internet companies.
Andrew, is there anything that can be done about this with the existing internet? Is there something that could change this and make it more democratic, make it more of a choice economy for people, make it a better internet?
I think the better internet really comes down to economics. We need to come up with business models which reward creative people, which enable creative people to earn a real living. Piracy was a catastrophe. The onset of piracy actually has decimated the recorded music industry, cutting its revenue over the last 15 years in half. streaming services, paid streaming services like Spotify, are an improvement. But even they aren't generating the kind of revenue that enable artists to earn a decent middle-class living. I think what is concrete is that entrepreneurs out there, startup people, need to come up with business models which reward artists, which will encourage people to produce their best work. I still think that there's a great appetite for quality journalism, quality photographs, quality music and movies. But at the moment, we don't have platforms that are able to reward artists for that. We have the beginnings. We have Netflix. We have Spotify. And maybe Netflix is an example of an internet platform which does reward quality.
Andrew Keen, author of The Internet is Not the Answer. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.